Welcome to Emotional Intelligence at Work, brought to you by Genos International. Hi, everybody. Hi, Ben. How are you?
Good, thanks, Marie. Great to be here with you again.
Great to be here with you too. For all our listeners, we are moving into a bit of a new direction this year with AI at Work. If you've been reading our newsletter, you'll know that it's going to be a huge year for emotional intelligence in general, and certainly a lot of exciting things coming up with Genos International as well. So what we thought we'd do is use the podcast this year to spotlight our certified practitioners and share some of their successes and challenges so that you can learn from them and understand how others in the Genos International tribe are using the tools and succeeding with them. I'm very pleased to welcome Georgia Bolton. Hi, Georgia.
Hi, Marie. Thank you for having me.
We're thrilled to have you. You're a newbie to the Genos International family. I think you got certified in December last year. Is that right?
Yeah, so it was early December last year. So being able to use it straight away, which has been amazing. But yeah, it would have been before Christmas.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you were doing before Genos.
Yeah, absolutely. So I work as a leadership consultant in all sorts of industries. So for example, last week I was in Hong Kong working with one of the biggest global law firms and their CEO, COO and immediate senior leadership team. And yesterday I was running a program for grads at a startup as part of their induction. So it's very varied in terms of the levels of leadership, management, and even from grad and individual contributor level, and really diverse industries. So as I say, from a global law firm, also been working with one of the biggest tech giants and their senior leadership team here in Australia. And then I know next week I'm working with a local council where I live in regional Victoria, which is country Victoria, about an hour and a half north of Melbourne. And I live here with my family. I've got three children. They're 11, 9 and 5. So continually testing my emotional regulation and awareness of myself and others, Marie and Ben, I can tell you. But that's in a nutshell what I do. And really the premise of our work is always about building psychological skills, particularly for leaders, but it can be from the ground up as well. But I'm really passionate about that top-down approach. And if we see the role modelling of behaviours that we want in the organisation from our leadership, then we know that we're more likely to see that cascade down.
Georgia, how long have you been working in this space for?
So I've been working in as a leadership consultant and working as a facilitator and coach for nearly 20 years now, which is a little bit scary. But I did my psychology accreditation back in the 90s. And I think, you know, in terms of where we're at now with emotional intelligence, it's really interesting because I think back then in the 90s, the focus was for me to going through that psychology degree and accreditation was very much on pathology and what's wrong with us and fixing people. And I think that that's really shifted. And now what we're seeing mainstream in business is this idea that actually we're all on a bell curve of mental health, and that continuum changes. And we don't even use that language much anymore, do we, of say mental illness. It's much more about mental health. And I think organisationally we're starting to get our head around that. So we're seeing it come into all sorts of different areas in training. So whether it's around how to have conversations with your people if they're struggling or approaching burnout, whether it is mental health and well-being, whether it is just about the way we're behaviourally relating to others in the workplace. So I think it underpins really everything we do if we think about emotional intelligence. And what I was attracted to in starting to think about using this tool and using the Genos tool is having some objective data or a way of quantifying that, which I think is what it really offers.
So were you using a tool prior to Genos? Were you helping leaders develop emotional intelligence prior to December last year?
We use all sorts of tools. So DISC is something that comes up a lot, and often organisations will fall back on that and the various other diagnostics out there, the strengths-focused diagnostics that I use. There's one from Capfinity, for example, which is leveraging our strengths, and that's something I use a lot. But really what I wanted to do was find something that specifically looks at emotional intelligence. And actually, I was talking with one of my providers that I work with and collaborate with a lot, Time to Talk, and they're local here in Australia, in Victoria. And we're in one of our catch-ups, and I said it'd be great to do an accreditation in emotional intelligence because it's so much about what we do. And to their credit, the leads at Time to Talk did some research and said, this is the tool that we think we should all do. Let's do it as a group. So all of their internal and external stakeholders, such as myself, came together and did the accreditation as one big group. So to your credit, accrediting a big group of facilitators, I'm sure, is sometimes a little bit challenging. But I think everyone was very engaged, and it was a good opportunity to throw a lot of questions out there and to work together. So, yeah, we loved it.
Georgia, I think one of the things that I picked up on as you were talking about is that shift that you've noticed in the last, over the 20 years, but this real shift more recently into mm-hmm. things like well-being. Mm-hmm. I certainly noticed that shift. Marie, we were reflecting on that Forbes article that came out saying emotional intelligence is really the number one leadership competency that organizations are looking for in people this year. And that certainly resonates, I think, with what I see organizations still very much leaning into and wanting to improve well-being. But I also think that there's a big shift, again, not only from what's going wrong and what needs to be improved, but into performance generally, how to optimize the performance of people. I think there's a big shift at the moment going on, looking at that sort of middle 50% of people that always exist in an organization. They're not great, but they're not bad. How do we really optimize their commitment, their enjoyment, their well-being, and their performance in the work? So yeah, for whatever, it really resonates with me. And I think if people haven't found that article, Marie, we should probably get it out in one of our newsletters, that Forbes magazine article. It really relates back to a lot of the World Economic Forum's reflections on future job skills for 2024 and beyond, and it speaks to a lot of the trends that George is talking about. And I think for people who are newly certified, knowing those trends, knowing how to position AI within those trends, and really talk to clients about how emotional intelligence fits into what's going on in the language of clients is a really valuable thing to learn and know how to do.
Yeah, and when you look at that job report that you're talking about, Ben, those 10 core skills, they really are these psychological skills that we're talking about. So things like cognitive flexibility, attentional regulation, we're more distracted than ever. So our ability to focus is more challenged than ever. We're more stressed than ever, despite the level of technology that we have access to. And this idea too that we're, you know, the pace of change. So as I said, I've been working with some of the big tech giants, and it is coming in very thick and fast, the level of change continuing on the AI space, and this idea that change has never been so fast and will never be so slow again, and the level of stress that is having on our people, and the impact of that stress and the awareness of it, and what are the protective factors and the risk that we need to be mitigating and aware of. And that's really what we go in and help people to identify and therefore think about.
Is that what they come to you asking for, Georgia, or do you bring these things to light to them? So, for example, is their brief to you, you know, the World Economic Forum's top 10 most essential skills include all these, so we need to build emotional intelligence. What are the problems that you're hearing from clients about that you see emotional intelligence as a really important solution for?
I think that's a really great question, because no, often it's not what they come to us with. So they might say, our people are really stressed. They need some techniques and some tips to manage stress. And so we'll say, oh, okay, so let's look at the relationship between stress and performance. And there's such a strong business case there that if we can help them to see that actually what they need to do is shift their mindset around stress. We can't get rid of the stress. The stress isn't going to disappear. Yet what we can do is start to think about how we view stress and our perspective on stress. And a lot of research out there says that's really significant. So raising our level of awareness of our mood state and the way that we think and feel and behave is really key to that, and the way that it's impacting others as well. So that can be a way in to start the ball rolling with this idea of thinking about emotional intelligence differently. And people have generally heard the term, you know, they're aware of the concept, or they're aware of, you know, of this as an idea, but they don't necessarily know what it means as a tangible, evidence-based way of changing the way that we have interpersonal relationships at work, and also for ourselves and for our own well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. With technology and with COVID, there's just a lot of decreased actual face-to-face interaction that goes on. It's coming back, but I think with the comeback, people are noticing that because we haven't been honing and practicing those skills naturally in our more face-to-face interactions, particularly at work, that there are more, I think, social issues and not the same level of finesse that people used to have in how they interact with each other.
Yeah, and that's really true, because you're right, we're in this hybrid world now that's normal, and I think people are starting to get fatigued by that, yet we know it's the new normal. We need to be able to manage it, but we're missing those anecdotal conversations, those moments at the elevator, or, you know, getting a coffee, or going downstairs and happen to run into someone and have a chat. We're not getting that. It's much more structured, isn't it? That we're on a Zoom call, for example, from 10 to 11, and this is what we need to cover, and we can have a quick chit chat in front of everyone else that's on that call as well. And it's not the same. So I think we've got to find ways around that and help people to think about how they navigate that ongoing.
Georgia, how was your certification experience?
Yeah, it was great. So as I mentioned, we did it as a really big group. So there was some of us that were very seasoned facilitators and coaches, trainers, and others that were doing it more internally for time to talk as a selling, a bit like what we were talking about earlier, Marie, with the marketing or the selling or understanding of the product in order to take it out to clients. Mm-hmm. And I just think it was a really great process because for those that haven't been through it or thinking about going through it, we do the assessment ourselves. So I went through the survey myself and did my own self-assessment and asked three people to rate me. And it was a very interesting process. So I asked two of my colleagues as well as one of the key providers that I work for and have ongoing relationship with. And we had an opportunity to debrief that for an hour. So I thought that was terrific. And it was really reassuring, actually, I think, to often we, as we know, we either underrate or overrate ourselves. And I probably underrated a couple of things. And it was really reassuring to see that feedback come through. And I found that a very, very useful exercise. And then we spent a whole day together talking about it. And I was really interested too. So your facilitator, the Genos facilitator on the day, was great at managing the group dynamic because, you know, we're a big group of us, and a lot of us facilitators ourselves, we're going to be.
How big was it?
I think there was about 20 of us.
Oh, wow.
I'd have to check. It was 20-ish. And, you know, we ask you lots of questions, and I was particularly interested in some of the standardisation of the way that we come up with the averages and the means. And it was really good to be able to flesh that all out, have a go, and then you do the one-hour catch-up session so you have a chance to practice it as well. So I thought it was pretty robust, actually. And I felt very prepared to, and I went and delivered it almost straight away. And I wonder too, I suppose, if I wasn't already doing this work and pretty deeply involved in it and having these types of conversations, would I need extra support than that? Maybe. I think if you were, I suppose most people in L&D and HR that are organising this type of training do have some good understanding, but there's varying levels out there. But I do wonder if I would need more support if I wasn't pretty across a lot of these concepts.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point, Georgia. And we do see a whole range of people come through certification, from people who are really not very experienced at all but want to become more experienced by experiencing things like doing debriefs and so on, to people who've been working for 20 years or more in this kind of space like yourself. And I think for people who are, for want of a better word, a little bit greener in this space of developing self-awareness and empathy through tools like the Genos instrument. One of the advantages I'd like to plug about the Genos approach is the tribe of practitioners that we have and just how willing I think people in our community are to assist in continuing to develop skills. Often people who go through the program, I notice them connecting up with each other and saying, let's go and practice a few debriefs with each other and things like that as well. And so I think that's a really great part of the Genos community that I'm very proud of.
Yeah, I think I'd feel very comfortable to reach out to any of the Genos internal team that I worked with. I think that comes through, that it is very supportive. So, yeah, I did notice that.
The other thing you mentioned that I think is a really beneficial thing to try and get organised around your certification is a client that you can start to work with quite quickly with the Genos approach. I think the quicker you come out of certification and actually start applying it, there's nothing like the need to stand in front of an audience or start debriefing some executives that sharpen your attention on how you're going to do it and so on. Would you say that's true? How was your first?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, what are the statistics that we retain about 10% of information that's told to us when you're interacting? It's 40-50% doing it yourself gets up to 80-90%. Teaching someone else, you can get up to 100%. So, yeah, the quicker you can do that, the better. And it was really fortuitous for me because I was working with a very large hospitality business in my region, and they've got a number of different venues and a number of different moving parts. They have both vintage and hospitality, and I was working with the hospitality leadership team, and they really wanted to work on, as we're talking about earlier, stress, managing stress, dealing with adversity and the interpersonal skills that come along with that, and helping their people to deal with that also at the customer level. And so it was just a great opportunity to bring in this tool, because what I wanted to do, because we did a 3-day immersive leadership program, so a big investment from the business. And because they wanted to work on managing stress as well as other areas of leadership style generally, and reflective as well as practical application of that, I thought, what a great way to start the program by doing a self-assessment. So we started there, and it was really interesting. So I had 10 participants, and they all did it. And some of these leaders and managers don't sit in front of a computer hardly at all. So I thought, oh, this will be really interesting to see how it lands. And they all really, really got a lot out of it. And some of them found it a little confronting at first, I think, and we worked through that and they really saw the benefit of it. So, yeah, it was a really good exercise for me that, as you're saying, Ben, at that executive level, when we're very used to doing these diagnostics and similar things, we've done a lot of professional development perhaps over our careers, you know, 10, 20 years in certain exec sectors. And this was quite a different space, and it was great to see it apply just as well for people that aren't necessarily having those sorts of conversations or having it front of mind. So, yeah, that was a really interesting exercise for me. And it worked brilliantly.
I also did the certification more for sales and marketing reasons. I could never, ever debrief anybody. Don't have the skills. But one of the things I found interesting from being the person being assessed was I did find it confronting when I sat down to have my debrief, because as a business owner, I haven't had feedback from anybody in over 10 years. So firstly,
wow,
that was quite confronting. Yeah. But the thing that I wish I had known in advance, I don't know if this might help yourself, Georgia, or other certified practitioners who are going to roll out assessments. I would have loved for the raters to have been told, hey, when you're rating, do take the opportunity to leave feedback. You know how there's the multiple, you kind of rate people and you're just kind of selecting things as you're going through the assessment survey. There's also an option to provide feedback. And I'd wished that my raters had taken that option, because where I had scored on the extremes, like really high or really low, that was surprising to me. I didn't have any contexts. Does that make sense? So it would have been awesome. I don't know if this is something, Ben, that you've come across in the past, but I just find that feedback note is just so useful to understand why you scored highly. Maybe I'm just bitter for that one thing I did really badly.
So, Marie, you made a verbatim comment. Yeah, I think
the verbatim comments,
huge benefit in those comments and having the understanding of why people are rating or thinking or feeling what they are. And also, I think that's something that we can be accountable for, though, as practitioners to a degree in the pre-coms and the way that we set up the diagnostic for people. So, for example, on the flip side, the self-assessment piece, I had one of my participants say, oh, I think I've rated myself how I think I should be rather than I think I actually am. So that was a learning for me that maybe in the pre-coms I could have been clearer. I made an assumption, I think, that everybody understood that this is a survey and what the purpose of it was. But I could have been clearer that this is completely confidential. No one's going to see this, including your manager. Therefore, please be as absolutely honest as you can about how well you think you're demonstrating these behaviours and attributes, because that would have helped this, particularly this one person, to feel more, to just be clearer about the intention there. Because I think there was that voice in her head thinking, oh, is someone going to read this? Is someone going to be judging how well I think I'm aware of my own mood state, etc.? But what it did do, having gone through the exercise, was give us a platform for all the work that I'd planned for them, which was really thinking about our mood state and emotions being behind how we think, feel and behave all the time. And that really helped them to understand, yes, and that, you know, I can see looking at this where those gaps are and what my areas of development could be. So it's very practical in that way, which is what I really liked about it, that it's data driven.
Georgie, you're mentioning some things that are front and centre of mind for me at the moment, which is about, for want of a better word, educating raters on how to complete 360 assessments. Mm. I'm writing a submission to a journal called the Journal of Consulting Psychology at the moment, and it's a piece on a case study on how we brought the instrument into an organisation. And so I'm reading all the literature on how you make 360s really effective, and that's really struck me about the importance of getting to raters and educating them on how to complete the assessment, whether they're a participant or a rater of a participant in a program. And one of the things that we've been doing in some of our projects at the moment are short little 1.5 to 3 minute videos for raters on how to complete and participate in the assessment. You'll notice there are qualitative comments. People get a lot out of those. So if you get the opportunity to think about some of those, please put them in. Even little things, you know, like how to just put aside 20 minutes of your life to do it in one hit, you know, in an environment that's free from distractions and things like that. And also, I think participants find it really beneficial to have very clear to them how to choose raters. Like we recommend in the Janos process to choose people who've known you for 6 months or more and worked with you in the last 12 months, people who get to observe your behavior in a variety of different contexts, whether it be live, virtual in teams, or whether it be face-to-face, one-on-ones, small groups, large group gatherings. I think for any behavior-based instrument, you've got to be observing behavior. And I think some people, you know, like to choose raters. They worked with in a project 3 years ago that went really well, and they really value that feedback, but the recency of it's not there. And it just gives me a chance to plug some of the custom features that we can build into an assessment project, like in the pre-emails that go out to people.
I mean,
put a little video recording that you've made for your client in there that speaks directly to them. People don't want to read all the time at the moment, I find, and they're watching on it's a video only goes for 90 seconds.
I know. Yeah, that's right.
The value of videos too, doesn't it, Marie? If they're any longer than 2 or 3 minutes, forget it.
Yeah, and they'll be little. You'll be dancing soon, doing a, you know, Beyonce dance as you give that information soon to make it sink in. If TikTok continues.
Oh, yeah. Short
Georgia,
grabs.
Georgia, tell me. So your first client came to you. Their challenge was about a stressed. They were faced with a stressed workforce. Is that right?
They're in hospitality, so I think yes, absolutely. Yep. That was part of it. And listening to one of your previous podcasts, actually, that focused on hospitality, that really resonated with the types of themes that were coming through. But also they wanted to work generally on leadership style, on things like time management, coaching others. So there was quite a variety of development areas. But certainly what I was reading beneath the text there was bound for burnout, managing well-being, ability to identify those risk factors, giving them some strategies and protective factors to think about, you know, the put on your own oxygen mask so you can help others. And I think in hospitality, that's really tough because of what you guys talked about around Christmas time, which is that they're really often understaffed, under-resourced, working really long hours. They're always on. They're dealing with customers complaining and having all sorts of issues. So we also looked at managing conflict and having difficult conversations. But again, as we know, our mood state is such a big part of how that impression is gained from the other party. So if I come into work and I'm feeling really frustrated and I'm really feeling that stress and allowing it to show, it's going to impact my interactions with everybody throughout that day unless I'm aware of it, one, and can manage it, two. So that's really where I was coming from with helping them to do that. Yeah.
And so how did you choose the Genos products that you worked with? What were they and how did you sell them in?
Well, actually, I gave them the option of the 360 wasn't – I talked about 360, first of all, because that's what I thought would be the most beneficial, but they just felt because of the nature of their work
– Is that the leadership 360?
Yeah, the leader, because they're all leaders. They're all leaders of teams within their own area because it's quite a large business with a lot of different venues. So some were in accommodation, some were in restaurant management, some that had a head chef.
Yep.
So I had quite a few different areas of the business. And they felt that getting the different racial groups wasn't going to be very practical for them because, for example, asking their direct reports to sit in front of a computer and fill out a survey, they just didn't know that they were going to be able to get them to do that. So we decided upon, I said, let's go for the manager rating and we'll use that as feedback. Actually, they went for the self-assessment as a ground startup, if you like. And after we did that, they thought, hang on, I think we do need the feedback. I was like, yeah, absolutely. I think it would be so beneficial. So we upgraded the product to a 180. So we did a self-assessment and then we upgraded to a 180 3 weeks later. So, which I think speaks to the quality of the report as well and seeing the benefit of it once you get it in your hand. And also, I think for me, I'm really happy to see the confidentiality that is so clearly posed. When the participant gets their report, it's up to them whether they share it. And I think with other products, what I've seen happen and what concerns have been raised is that I didn't know when I filled this out that my manager was going to get the report the same time as me. And I've seen that happen. Mm. And it's quite problematic in terms of the trust and then how we debrief it. So that was really important to me that people felt it was confidential, that it's up to them what they share, and also the feedback that they see is confidential and it's up to them what they then go and have discussions with that person about. So I really like the template for that. I think that's very clear with the Genos reports that this is for you and then what you choose to do with it is up to you. Yeah.
Did you use the group reporting function? Is that available in the 180, Ben?
Yeah, it is. And did you, Georgia? I'm not sure if you did, but...
I don't think so. Tell me about the group reporting function. Maybe I don't know if I did.
Look at me all over it. I'm so proud.
So I received a link with all of the reports as well as all the individual tips for that report.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fantastic. One of the things you can do is click a button and aggregate all the data and that produces a group. And you can go back to a client and talk about trends that came out from the discussions. They're a great way of keeping individual debriefs that you've had private and confidential and development focus, but using the group reports, just talk back to the client about, you know, adjust their style so they fit well with others. For example, it's a great item that underpins situational leadership and the capacity to be agile in your leadership approach. And if you get group data that's, say, a little bit low on that, it can speak to the need for ongoing development around, say, a behaviour like that or a particular competency of the six that was lower than others. That sort of thing is what the group reports can do.
That would be very useful.
Georgia, one of the things that certified practitioners, even one that's on the podcast with us, might be interested to know is this year, we're running a series of product knowledge sessions. Mm-hmm. They're available off our website. They're free. And they talk to all these other little features of the Genalys approach that people have access to. So for everyone out there who may not be familiar or even be able to recall that there are group reports that you can generate, have a look on our events tab on our website and have a look at those product knowledge sessions. They're free and they run throughout the year, and there will be one there on group reports that you can look at. Absolutely.
Oh, great. I'll definitely look into that.
And
that
you've launched so much.
Yeah.
Mm. I think Genalys has launched so much over the last few years, especially digital features and additional products. So, yeah, definitely worth checking them out to stay across them. Georgia, how long did the process take to complete issuing the survey to getting the feedback and debriefing?
So that was pretty flexible, actually. We talked about that. So when I had conversations with your team about how we'd set the timelines, and it was quite a tight timeline because I came in and said, look, we'd really want to run this for the training upcoming. I think at the time it was about 10 days away, and we thought, okay, what's realistic and what can we do? Which was another reason we chose the self-assessment for the timing initially. It was pretty quick. It was pretty quick though. As soon as what I found in my portal, once I worked out how to navigate the portal, there's so much in there. And I could have control over the reminders. I was able to download the report as soon as it had been completed. So that was super useful. So I could keep a track of how we're going and see what the group was up to and send out reminders to those that hadn't done it. But I was also very supported from that end by your internal team because they were dealing with all of the logistics, which I was very grateful for because that's probably not my strength. Of sending out the surveys and the reminders. So that was terrific. But it's doable within, I would say, 7 days if you got your ratings to do it. But it depends how quickly they fill out the survey though, doesn't it? So if you've got a couple of raters dragging their feet that haven't done it, that's going to hold up the process. But if you felt confident, I can get my people to fill it in the next 5 days, there's no reason why you couldn't have the reports within 7.
And then did you debrief everybody virtually or in person?
No, I was in there with them. So we were a group. What I did it as a group debrief and a paired debrief exercise, and then I invited them to follow up with me to have a one-on-one if they felt that they'd like to do that, as well as with my HR support. So while she hadn't seen their report, she made herself available to have any discussion around things that might have come up or questions or insights that they were getting. So that was really good too, that I had support internally from the business at the client end to say, look, if people are feeling a bit unsettled about some of the feedback, please let them know to come and see me. And I made myself available as well. But I think too, because of the way we set up the process of receiving feedback over the 3 days, they felt a lot more comfortable by the end of it than they did at the start. So they did really understand this idea of opening up their blind spots and seeing what other people might be seeing that they're not seeing. They're very, very keen to see their manager's feedback after seeing the self-assessment. So they were really hungry for that. And also enables you to open up conversations, doesn't it, Marie? Exactly what you were saying earlier, that I run my own business. I haven't had feedback for 10 years. To be saying, how often are we having these frequent informal feedback conversations? So it's not a shock to be saying something like this. And how is the business managing that, and what opportunity do we have there? So it really opened up a lot of different discussion. And I just think the objectiveness of the data is what is so powerful, because, you know, we have the 6 competencies, the 7 questions, and if they've got orange traffic lights on some of them and they're thinking, oh, okay, this area is really jumping out at me, what's going on there? It's very practical. Rather than just thinking, oh, how self-aware are you? And people think, oh, what does that mean? And what do I do with that? It's very specific. So that's also what I liked about it.
Georgia. Sorry, Maria.
I was just going to say, sorry, Ben. I was just going to tell anyone who hasn't seen the tool before or what it looks like that there are sample assessments on the website. So go check it out so that you understand what that traffic light system is if you've not seen it.
Yeah, it's quite a unique feature of our particular approach. Georgia, one of the things that I think is a legitimate mindset perhaps to even have that I often hear quite experienced people like yourself say is, well, I've been developing self-awareness and empathy for the last 10, 15 years in my work. What additional things is this really going to give me? And undoubtedly, you've been using DISC and other tools for many years by the sound of things. Were you surprised by the additional kind of insights that you got from working with the Genos product? Do you think it was a marginal gain, an incremental gain? How would you summarize, do you think, the experience you had with it above and beyond perhaps what your expectations were or what you were thinking might happen with it?
Yeah, I think the difference with it is the specific behaviors. So if, for example, and I know people look at the traffic light system when you see it, so green, orange and yellow, the orange ones are saying there's quite a big gap there. So whether that's a gap between how important I think it is and how I'm rating myself or how other people are rating me, then it's really specific. So that for me is the point of difference, because while, as you say, people are working on empathy or trust and active listening and the skills that are embedded in those sort of principles, this is saying very specifically there is a gap, or it's reassuring feedback that it's something I'm doing really well. Whereas I think other diagnostics, while they might have that type of detail in the questions, it's not always what you see at the end report result. So, for example, I do, all of my very detailed and sometimes repetitive questions to go through a diagnostic, and then I come out with my behavioural preferences and what I might keep in mind. And while that is specific and tailored to a degree, it's not at the same level of the individual behaviours and attributes that I think we offer here with this Genos report. Because I can look at that and literally see, okay, the way that I am impacting others based on how I'm feeling is something that I'm not as aware of as I could be. And that's something very tangible and practical that I can work on. Whereas if you say to me, oh, I think that you're not aware enough of others, what does that mean though? What do I do with that? So this gives you the evidence to say this is where people are not seeing that in the way that you're interacting in the workplace. So let's have a talk about why they're not seeing that from your point of view and what's going on. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the point of difference, Ben, if that's helpful, that it's very practical, tangible, specific. And through that information, then I can utilize it to behavioral change. And then, of course, it's up to them how they implement that and use that. And we can continue to support there. But, ultimately, habitual change we know is up to the individual. But it does set them up with a pretty good foundation to make that happen.
Yeah, I would agree. I think tools like DISC are really great in teaching us about different styles and how to style flex, for example. And I think when you then bring the addition of, say, a Genos in, it's more about the real skills of being able to style flex. I think people get that in theory and think they're doing it and have the right intentions around it, but don't have the feedback that actually they're not really picking up on different styles effectively. The empathy and self-awareness isn't there in particular. And so it makes that work so much more effective. I think it's really is that some of the more foundational bits that you need to style flex and be a situational leader or more agile in your behavior well. And I think what it does, in my opinion, above and beyond tools that are more oriented towards personality, is it does build more of the well-being stuff as well. Does get you thinking about how well you're managing your mood and emotion, or you're positively influencing on the way others feel. My favorite competency of all the six is authenticity, whether there really is authenticity in your relationship, say you're expressing how you feel effectively and generating authentic dialogue. I think that's so key to effective relationships in particular.
Yeah, I think it also gives some visibility of internally what I'm thinking and feeling versus what others are seeing. So, for example, it might be that I'm feeling quite overwhelmed, or I'm feeling, that I'm not really on top of things, yet what I'm seeing from my peers or from my manager is I'm coming across as very organized. So that gives me great insight into how I'm thinking and feeling versus how I'm being seen, or vice versa, could be the other way around. But not sure that all tools give you that level of visibility, both from self and others, on that level of specificity. Yeah. Sorry, Marie.
That's okay. There's a lag, and that's because we're recording remotely, everybody.
All right.
Leading into the Zoom world. I wanted to ask you how many people took up your offer to have a one-on-one after they received their debrief? Did anyone need that?
So far, three have, but it's an ongoing invitation. Oh. So I'm actually waiting to check in with four that I haven't been able to yet, because it ended up being staggered in the third day of the program. So that was just structurally what ended up happening. So there's four that I'm still yet to check in with. And of the six that have completed, I've had three reach out. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see how many more.
And what was the feedback from the participants so far?
They've found it really useful. So they, again, a couple of them that were initially a bit confronted and were like, oh, I don't do this sort of thing and I wasn't sure how to fill it in, have come really a long way on the journey and are now seeing it as a great reflective piece, but also an opportunity. And one manager particularly has found it to be quite a breakthrough for them in terms of how others are seeing their levels of frustration play out on the floor in the workplace. Mm. And that's just something that they'd had some general feedback on, but they weren't aware of. So that's been really a very big light bulb moment for them. So yeah, the feedback's been overwhelmingly positive. I haven't had anyone say that it wasn't useful or why are we doing this? So, which I, you know, and I wasn't sure because again, these are managers that aren't sitting in an office and it's not something that they're necessarily prioritizing. Yeah, overwhelmingly, they've been really positive, which has been a very good exercise for me too, working with different industry. Because I've worked with hospitality before, but more at exec level. So this was really interesting to see the managers that are actually dealing with the operations and how they would respond to a tool like this. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's really good.
Ben, from a measurement perspective, like at what point do you go in to see whether overall there's been an impact on, for example, stress levels? Or the original challenge? And how do you measure that? How would you link it back to the assessment or the program, AI program?
I think in an ideal world, you'd always do pre and post assessments of both the client need and the intervention that you put in place. So you'd have measures of things like occupational stress and then levels of EI and do that pre and post. In reality, very few clients have the budget for it. And in reality, it doesn't happen as frequently enough as it should. And so I think it's really important, as Georgia has, to reflect on, capture and report back to clients on themes and little things that are coming out of it. And, you know, if I think about a group of 10, Georgia, even for one person to have, in of that 10, to have some deep insight from it and to really unlock perhaps more effective leadership, that could mean, you know, one less staff turns over in their team, or, you know, eight out of the seven in that team become more committed. And that's where real return on investment, I think, comes from. The research in our data shows that improved levels of EI relate to better employee engagement, which means the quality of your employment brand improves. Your employee retention should become better. You get better discretionary effort. And of course, you get more of a mindset of people turning up not just to do the work, but to continuously improve and try to improve what they do. So you get a little bit more of that sort of innovation culture coming out. And it leads me to give you a little quote. I love little snippets of inspiration. It's one of the things I'm really trying to get leaders in my own work to do more of. So here's thought for the day, everyone. A person who feels appreciated will always do more than what's expected. And this is what I mean about those little, that leader who might just start to do marginal gains in making people feel valued and doing little things in the day that bring that about. Things like that can result in improvements to your employment brand, improvements to talent retention, and importantly, improvements to discretionary effort, which in hospitality, when people go above and beyond, Georgia, I'm sure resonate on this. That's what really makes for a great client experience. That's what creates
absolutely
loyalty and profitability at the end of the day for a hospitality.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think too, and just, you know, really in line with what you're saying there, Ben, is it's about getting this into the water of the way that we work, you know, getting it in the water, getting it in the way that we work and the flow of work, rather than just saying, you know, here's a well-being initiative, you should do it. And we know, you know, the evidence says that doesn't actually work. And often we're very reactive and we are putting in initiatives because we've got a problem. Whereas I think what this allows us to do, and it's really aligned with where my focus is shifting in the training and the facilitating coaching that we're doing, is that we need to get organisationally and individually more proactive. So rather than just dealing with things when they go wrong and people are not coping, let's get really proactive in the way that we're working. Mm-hmm. And this is how we do it. And these are building the psychological skills to help us to do that. So I think having the objective data that you've got in a report to give you that direct feedback, as well as measuring it against your own assessment, it's a really big step to doing that, because I think that's where we often get it wrong. And when you look at the global spend on well-being, you know, it's in the billions. We look at WHO's data, and yet we're not seeing return on investment. But this is how we can start to get it. And so that's you could hear probably that's what I'm quite passionate about, and thinking about how we do that is often the challenge. And I really do feel like this tool gives us that springboard to start to make those changes. So that's where I see it fitting into the scope of my work ongoing.
So what does that ongoing piece look like? What does the future look like for you, Georgia, with this tool? What are your plans?
Well, I've been thinking about that a bit, actually, and I think from an individual level, I'll be bringing it in whenever I can, particularly into leadership programs and rollouts that allow us to have the time to delve into work like this. I think, too, one of the providers I collaborate with, Time to Talk, who managed and rolled out this training for all of us, the accreditation rather, they're looking at using it in all sorts of different interactions too. So I think we'll see more of it in my direct space, but I work with a lot of different facilitators, particularly Melbourne, Sydney based. So I think it's something that I'll be able to bring in as a point of difference too. Some of my colleagues went through the accreditation, so we might be able to collaborate on a few things as well.
Sounds amazing. Well done. Well done for just, you know, getting certified and having a client ready to successfully use the tools on. Well done.
Oh,
we're thrilled to have you as part of the community. Thanks for coming on.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
It was so great talking to you. I hope we get to see you at the conference or at, you know, one of the events that we hold throughout
the year. Yeah, I'd love to. Thank you.
Thanks, Marie. And thanks, Georgia. It's been great to have this episode with you guys. Thank you.